Hello and welcome to the final episode of Art Satsang.
CERN is the largest physics lab in the world. And Arts at CERN fosters dialogue between artists and physicists through art residencies and commissions. I'm Ana Prendes, content producer at Arts at CERN.
And I'm Monica Bello, curator and head of Arts at CERN. Today we are looking at the importance of symmetry, both in physics and art, and what happens when the symmetry breaks.
Symmetry means for me stillness, balance, and feeling calm. But once we want to create a tension, we break the symmetry.
When a symmetry is broken, there have been some small fluctuations that are acting on a system, they have crossed what we call a critical point. And crossing this critical point decides the fate of the system.
Joining me is Tamara Vázquez-Roda and Wen Chisu.
Tamara is an experimental physicist working at the ATLAS experiment, a huge detector at the Large Hadron Collider. Quenchi is a choreographer, dancer, and founder in Yi Lab, an experimental group of new media and performance artists from Taiwan.
The importance of symmetry in physics can be described by a theorem formed by Emmy Noether in 1915. Our conversation began by asking Tamara to tell us about Emmy Noether and her theorem.
Yes, so Emmy Noether was actually one of the leading mathematicians of her time, and it was described actually by Albert Einstein as a creative mathematical genius. And her theorem that is really fundamental in mathematical physics states the following, that if a system has a continuous symmetry property, then there are corresponding quantities whose values are conserved in time.
And what does this exactly mean?
So this basically explains the connection between a symmetry in a system and the conservation laws that this implies. So you can imagine, for example, a system that behaves the same regardless of the orientation in space. So that means that it's symmetric under continuous rotations, that if you're in one position and then you turn 180 degrees, your system is still the same. This means that the angular momentum of the system is conserved. This would be the conservation law associated to it. Or, for example, if a system, it also behaves the same regardless of the place or the time, then we say that it's symmetric under continuous translations in space or time. And here is the linear momentum or the energy, respectively, of the system that is conserved. So these rotations or translations is what we call transformations. So when we say that the system is symmetric under these transformations, we mean that the system remains the same before and after the transformation.
Wenti, for you as a contemporary dancer and choreographer, what does these transformations mean to you and what does symmetry mean in your work?
As a dancer and choreographer, I work a lot with my body itself, and I work a lot in the theater also that's concerned in designing the space and designing the time for the piece. So symmetry for me, I guess it refers a lot to the geometry, to line, surface, and three-dimensional space. For example, the shape or the dynamic is in balance, or it's kind of in the constant transformation, which is evolved. I guess something is unsymmetrical or chaotic and random and prompt change. So symmetry means for me, in energy-wise, it gives a feeling of stillness, balance, and feeling calm or peaceful. But once we want to create a tension, we break the symmetry. Either we break the symmetry of the space, break the symmetry of the dance shape. Because I believe, like, psychologically, people really want to fix it. So when you break that balance, it creates dynamic to your artwork.
I guess, Tamara, this relates a lot to particle physics and breaking symmetries. So can you explain what broken symmetry is in relation to your work?
Yes, it's actually a very interesting concept, and it's everywhere in particle physics. I mean, we can understand when a symmetry is broken, that there have been some small fluctuations that are acting on a system, they have crossed what we call a critical point. And crossing this critical point decides the fate of the system. So it has moved from this harmonical or symmetric state that when she was talking about, to now a different, more asymmetrical state. But there is somewhat a reason for this choice.
When we were speaking before, you mentioned this spontaneous symmetry breaking can be represented by the shape of a sombrero, a Mexican hat. Can you describe us the shape?
Yes, yes. This is actually a very nice visual representation of what we call the potential of the Higgs field, that when it's broken, when the spontaneous symmetry breaking happens, it looks like a Mexican sombrero. So again, going back to our symmetric point, you can imagine geometrically, this would lie in the absolute center of the top at the peak of the sombrero. But this is not a stable symmetry. So this also relates with what Wenqi was mentioning, that even though geometrically symmetric, it's not the most stable point to be. Because if we imagine to put a ball in this peak, a minimum fluctuation, a minimum, you know, change in its position will result in the ball falling into the rim of the sombrero. So harmony is true, is related to symmetry, which is the peak. However, the most balanced point, the point with lowest energy or the lowest value of this potential, would be within the rim, which is creates an asymmetrical position of this point. So it's important to realize again what we were talking about, this critical point, that in the very early universe, so close to the Big Bang, there was a symmetric phase where all these fundamental particles were massless. And it was at a certain temperature, when the temperature started to go down, that there was this phase transition where the Higgs field displaced its ground state, this state of lowest energy, of the most balanced point. And this is how we get this sombrero shape of potential. And this is precisely the spontaneous symmetry breaking we're talking about.
Wenqi, you mentioned in your performance, you utilize this breaking of asymmetry to create dynamics. And one could say it would be similar to breaking this critical point that Tamara was talking about. How is this breaking symmetries represented in your work?
How I break the symmetry to create the dynamics. This reminds me also experience when I stay in CERN and when I have a chance to look at the cloud chamber. And then somehow I realize, even as a dancer and choreographer, when my body stays stillness, like I'm not dancing, I'm not creating any dynamics through my movement. My body itself is constantly changing still because, you know, when they explain me, when this particle passing through my body and then it will cut some of my DNA open. And then so my DNA is constantly in the transformation of, you know, like trying to fix things. So that I realized that even I stay in stillness, that my body is still changing no matter how. Somehow this changed my idea about how to create movement, because movement is there even when you are not creating anything. So this is maybe not voluntarily you break the symmetry. And when I break the symmetry in my work, and as I said, for example, when I work in a installation called WAVE. When I design this installation, I also trying to imagine what's the different scale of things, like how to give the audience the feeling of they are in the universe simply through the design of the different shape of this installation. So this installation has the 81 LED light, and which can go up and down with different speed. So I can design it into a different shape in a three-dimensional space. It can be a triangle, it can be a half circle, it can be a simple surface, or it can be like a randomly cosmic rain. And with this different shape or timing, of course, I try to design in a way that audience can feel while they are in the universe or rather they are living in the city. And so this is the imagination that when I work on symmetry or symmetric form or in symmetric form, and to give the sensation of the audience that actually they are in the different spaces. It can be really like in the human scale or in the outer space.
And when you mentioned where you were in the cloud chamber and you realized that even though you were stillness, you felt that your body was still moving, how do you translate that into your performances? How has that changed the way you create movement?
I guess that experience really gave me a change in understand movement, because I realized in physics, movement or motion doesn't equally means to what I know before. I realized it can be discussed into the different scale. For example, the movement of the universe, the movement of the star, and behind that, there's a pattern. And that pattern is the movement as well. And if I talked about with someone who is into biology, and then she will talk about the movement of the cell, the movement of tiny things that we can't even see. So it becomes like a very rich reference for me, which movement can be voluntarily when you just have to give the reference to the audience. This is about the universe. Or you just have to give the hint to the audience. This is about particle, for example. Then I found that kind of, layers of discussion is very rich to have.
Well, Tamara, at Atlas, you actually look for these patterns of movements of particles, detecting them at the Large Hadron Collider. And now you are looking for new physics beyond the standard model. Can you tell us briefly what the standard model is and what other kinds of broken symmetries you are looking for?
Yes, so the standard model of particle physics basically comprehends our current knowledge of nature, the best way we can explain nature at the most elementary level. So the standard model of particle physics is composed of several elementary particles, which means that to our knowledge, they are not composed by smaller particles. And between these particles, there are these forces or interactions acting among them, and there is always a particle associated to this interaction. And concerning the symmetries, there are actually also several symmetries that are preserved or broken, depending, for example, on the interaction that we're talking about. There are, for example, three near symmetries, which are what we call CPT. So C, it's the charge symmetry, which means that a particle is replaced by its antiparticle, which is basically the same as the particle, but it has opposite charge. Then the universe remains the same if, for example, we have a charge symmetry. The P is for parity symmetry, which means that if we see the universe mirrored along the three physical axes, then we will still see the same universe. And this, for example, is not preserved in some interactions, for example, like the weak interaction. And finally, we have the T standing for time, the time symmetry, where we say that the universe, it's basically invariant with respect to the direction of time that we're looking at, either past or future. So these symmetries, I call them near symmetries, because each of them is broken in the present-day universe. But the standard model predicts that the combination of the three symmetries must be preserved. So it's what we call CPT symmetry. When we change all the three or make these all three transformations at the same time, then we should still keep our same universe. But coming back to the broken asymmetries and the importance of it to explain our universe, we see that, for example, the violation of the charge and the parity, so the CP violation, it's necessary to explain the presence, for example, of significant amount of baryonic matter compared to the antimatter in the universe, which is one of the famous open questions for us scientists to explain why there is a world, a universe of matter that remained today and not having had a perfect symmetry of matter-antimatter at the beginning of the early universe that would have annihilated into energy. So we see that for us to exist, actually, there had to be a symmetry. I find it, again, important to highlight the beauty of the asymmetry to also explain our current world. And it's our mission as particle physicists to understand really the source of this asymmetry, which is, for example, to the level to explain this asymmetry between matter and antimatter, the standard model does not provide enough CP violation. So this is something, for example, it's a very fruitful area of research in particle physics.
So amazing. It's so amazing to, you know, like, yeah, amazing what just Tamara said. Like, I found this symmetry very interesting and poetic. And I remember in CERN, I heard a lot about standard model, like the scientists trying to construct this standard model. But at the same time, they are also concerned about there's something else. I remember when they talked about Higgs boson, and they are happy but worried at the same time, you know, because they realize they found something, but then there's tons of unknown. They still are still there. So I found this kind of awareness, also a stay awake, that the nature doesn't really reveal it in such a, let's say, simple way. Yeah. So I found something really poetic when Tamara mentioned about T-symmetry, because it talks about the future and the past. So I just had a question, like how I perceive the future is the same as I perceive the past. I already have some images, like memories from the past, and but then how I can refer that to my future. So that kind of how you perceive your life can be symmetrical. I don't know. It's a very interesting reference for me.
Yes, I know. It's indeed extremely interesting. And also for us, it's a bit counterintuitive when we talk about this. I mean, we're mostly talking about our equations, how they transform under transformation. So at some point, we're even handling very abstract concepts. But it's true that when we try to link it with our actual perception of time as humans, then it becomes very hard to understand. So I think it helps us also to live in this abstract world, to be able to take a leap that allows us to go further without the prejudice of a human being thinking, well, it's impossible to go to the past. So it's like a playground, this abstract world where we can really test things that are maybe crazy or counterintuitive in normal life. And hopefully there is where we can make the jump to the next stage or the new theory that could explain nature. So it's, as you said, Wenqi, I love what you said, that it's mandatory, I think, as an artist, as a scientist, to be open-minded, because you never know in which direction actually the truth will be. So there are really no silly questions to ask.
Wenqi, your residency was in 2016, and after that, you started developing theatrical production and developed, as you mentioned, a trilogy of works. What did they each focus on?
My residency in CERN is on 2016, and that was kind of, for me, was the mind-opening experience. Like, stay 6 weeks with scientists and in CERN, and they are really lovely people and showing me around. So I guess for me, after the residency, it took me a year to digest what happened, you know. And there's a lot of new concepts. But then when I'm trying to test it or to reference it to what I'm doing and also in my life, I guess it creates a very chaotic time, which is kind of like you are bumped by something and then you try to figure out what's happened. And so I start to create slowly and trying to reflect my feelings into my artwork. And so I create three works. So just briefly, Unconditional Fact and Love. It sounds really romantic. After, you know, spending time in CERN, I do feel very romantic in a way that I guess it's this kind of passion and love, what I just said. And very obsessed into something. And so unconditional means for me to be open-minded and not to frame myself into the history of the arts. And can I also see the history of the science as a reference? And then the second work called Infinity Minus One. And in this work, actually, I work with a mathematician. And I guess first time I worked with a mathematician in the kitchen of CERN. And it was a lovely encounter because she told me about the beauty of the equation she believes and how the mathematic can be the language of nature and as well. So I tried to discover this direction into this work. And the mathematician I work with is Taiwanese, and he said to me, like, actually, the idea of infinity concerns a lot about, you know, space and time as well. How you can divide space into the infinity, like you just divide space constantly, like trying to make it even. So I love this kind of reference to the space I know. And we have this idea of multiverse, like how you divide this space into a way that gives the reference people are at the same time in the universe, at the same time in the particle world. The third one called entropic shadow, and this one is more related to the ecological crisis that we have nowadays. And so this entropic shadow happened before what COVID happened. And I guess at that timing, everyone really feels the tension of crisis. We don't know what all this big problem that we are handling or facing in the contemporary world, can we solve it and how can we understand it? So I guess this making artwork is the way I digest how I experience, and the experience in CERN really opens me up to the many interesting subjects.
So what were the biggest challenges you faced while working with the physicists and engineers at CERN?
In the beginning, I don't really know like how to approach such a discipline that I am not familiar with. Maybe the frustration part is I cannot fully be close to what the particle theory is about. I guess that for me, there's still a limit. So I would say, like, I'm trying to understand in my own scale as an artist, but there's a certain part for me I cannot really grasp. So in terms of the explaining this experience to the artist I work, it's also challenging, because then sometimes performing artists will ask, so what is this to do with me? So I found also challenging is how I translate to the artists I work with. And so slowly I learned that the artists need their language, like the sound artists need that I use the language of music, and the dancer needs I use the language of a choreographer. So how I negotiate with my artists I work with and how we understand each other.
Tamara, you have also been involved with many artists in residency at CERN. Have you found any similar challenges as when she's mentioning?
Yes, I mean, the challenge as when she mentions of the language is, of course, I mean, a tricky one. But I think ultimately also, especially in the discussion with artists, the whole aim should be to awake this passion. So if artists, as when she very nicely, and I feel just so happy seeing when she excited about seeing our work, it's precisely this the goal. People outside the scientific community feel this thrill, this passion to recognize the beauty in the pursuit for truth, or our intention to explain nature is something common to human nature. We are curious beings. We want to understand where we are, or where we came from, where we're going. And ultimately, from the physics point of view, this we do it by trying to go to the most elementary level of the composition of nature. So if we manage to awake this similar passion, even though maybe the details from the mathematics are not fully understood, I think this is already a success.
I was stunned by how many questions scientists have. And that is endless. And somehow I found very zen in a way, like working with them, because they are never surrender, you know. They never surrender to the one single triumph or, you know, like, or this kind of a critical moment of something. And they are someone always awake and being alert. There's always something else. And I love that. I love this very critical manner, and knowing that it's just not enough, or it's not just like that. And this I appreciate.
Yes, it's been really a pleasure as a scientist to be able to discuss and work with several artists and be part of the projects, the evolution of the projects, because it's really at CERN where this kind of transforms into something that we can then observe or feel or perceive. So it's a really very dynamic process. The artist doesn't come probably at the start with a clear idea of what they want to do. And it's really out of the encounters with scientists and with also the surrounding here at CERN that they come up with what they actually want to do. So these have had also, as a scientist, a manifold effect for me, because by explaining also the work I do at CERN to artists, I've also learned so much about maybe could be surprising, as when she says that maybe as scientists we're so used to this vocabulary or these concepts, and then we see this surprise effect in the artist's face, and it's just beautiful to realize about this by discussing with them, or things that might be counterintuitive to them, or sometimes common. And this I find also extremely enriching, that they maybe in a different language, but we still have common procedures, common approaches to the unknown, and it's good that we recognize it. So that there is not always this separation between arts and science. And yes, and when letting myself also immerse into the world or the project of the artist, I can also let other doors open. So it's really a creative process for me as well, with sometimes unexpected results. And since, as when she says, we're never comfortable with the current state of our findings, we really always want to know more, and we know there is more out there. We just need to create, you know, more precise, more powerful, wider reach experiments to unveil this truth. Then we have to be also ready for the unexpected, and how to look for the unexpected. I think from there, the work with artists can be extremely awakening.
That was Tamara Vázquez-Roda talking to me alongside Wayne Tissou. We heard music and sound design from Wenty's projects, including live music from Senyawa and sound design from Lai Tsung-Yung, Esteban Fernandez, and Gu Ping-Sheng.
And that concludes our series of conversations celebrating the 10th anniversary of Arts at CERN. And I hope these interactions between our colleagues, artists, and scientists have been enjoyable for you as much as they have been for us.
This podcast has been produced by Reduced Listening. The producer is Rebecca Gaskell, and the executive producer is Jack Hausen. I'm Anna Brendes.
And I'm Monica Bello. Thanks for listening.